Welcome to Doing Sustainability, a podcast that features practical and actionable approaches to sustainability, brought to you by Baker. In every episode, we have enlightened conversations with corporate and business leaders on the vision, motivation, actions, and impacts of sustainability.
We discuss best practices, fresh perspectives, tips, and solutions to help a company demonstrate its ESG commitment and position themselves for long-term success. Hi, I'm your host, Rocket.
And I'm your host, Gary. Let's start the show. Today, we're talking with Susan McPherson. Susan, they call you a serial connector, an angel investor, and a corporate responsibility expert. Susan founded her company, McPherson Strategies. She's the CEO, a communication consultancy focused on the intersection of communication and social impact. She's an author of The Lost Art of Connecting, The Gather, Ask, and Do Method for Building Meaningful Relationships. Susan has 30 years of experience in marketing, public relations, and sustainability communications, speaking regularly at industry events, Massachusetts Conference for Women. There's a whole lot of
You don't need to read it all.
She's a contributor to Harvard Business Review, Fast Company, Forbes. There's a list that goes on there. Susan is a recipient of the Forbes 50 over 50 Impact. That's great. I've always read about 30 under 30. Really kind of really
nice to know, right?
I want to be in the 50 over 50. She's also won numerous accolades for her voice and social media platforms from Fortune, Fast Company, etc. I'm going to stop there. Great to have you on the show.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
Yeah, there's so much to talk about. I think I want to start with your business. You focus on the intersection between communication and social impact. We're a corporate brand agency. We have intersections too. But I would love for you to describe that intersection.
Well, we primarily are a communications firm, but we only do the communications of impact. Our clients range from Fortune 500 companies to foundations to nonprofits, and every once in a while, individuals, but very rarely, and every once in a while, a couple of startups here and there. But generally, it's major corporations helping them communicate the impact they are having to the audiences they are wanting to reach. So in some cases, it could be their internal employees, so internal communications. In others, it could be to the consumers that purchase from them. It could be through advocacy to help make change. We know that companies play a role in social justice, even though there is pushback that we're seeing right now. But companies have power. Companies have the means to help lead to positive change if handled correctly. So that gives you an idea of how we intersect the two.
In your work, what are you most proud of?
I'm most proud of my team. I would be nowhere without the wonderful, and they're all women right now. That isn't intentional. It just so happens, but they are so committed. But I will say a couple of major projects over the years, one being something called Don't Ban Equality. We founded that in conjunction with, at the time, NARAL, Planned Parenthood, the Center for Reproductive Rights, and the ACLU, with the goal to help businesses understand why access to reproductive health care is vital for equality, vital for the economic future of women and people who give birth, and why by banning abortion, you're causing inequity in the workplace. And so in 2019, we launched that in response to eight states that had banned abortion. Because what was becoming challenging for companies is the whole issue of hiring, if they had people working in those states and they wanted to bring people there. And at the time, we were able to galvanize 180 CEOs to sign a letter stating that banning abortion was bad for business. Well, fast forward when Dobbs was signed and Roe v. Wade was decimated, we now have over 1,000 companies who've signed that aren't just signing for the pure joy of signing, but sending a very strong message to the politicians making these laws. And there's many benefits to all this, but one is legitimizing reproductive health care. When we first started this work in 2018, when we were reaching out to businesses, they wouldn't mention the word abortion. There was always this notion that like childcare, parental leave, HR issues were here and women's reproductive health care was here. But now, if anything, they're aligned. And I like to think we played a small role in that and providing a resource for businesses where they can go get more information. So that would be one. Oh my gosh, we have so many interesting clients. We helped launch Nike and Dove's Body Positivity Toolkit, which is a toolkit.
Is that a collaboration?
Nike's our client, but their partner was Dove. And you might have seen in the Super Bowl, there was an ad that Dove played all about girls finding sports to be a roadmap to finding their power and strength and confidence. But in the fall, we launched something called Body Positivity, which was a toolkit and more for coaches all over North America, because coaches can influence tween and teen girls in ways.
Usually.
Yeah. I mean, I still have memories of my high school coach, and I'm not going to say her name in case she's listening out there telling me that if I was a gymnast, if I gained a pound, I wouldn't be in the meet on Friday.
Yeah.
And, you know, granted, this was the 70s, but those types of things are detrimental.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
So we helped launch that and got amazing visibility. But I could go on and on.
So I'm a creative. I'm a designer. I'm not a writer. And I thought I wanted to write a book about 2 years ago, but I started a podcast instead.
It's so much more fun. I assure you.
We learned so much.
Yeah.
Wonderful global people, all sorts of perspectives and angles on sustainability. It's really been wonderful.
But your book, The Lost Art of Connections, love the title. What was the motivation for that book?
In many, for years, people kept telling me, you need to write a book, you need to write a book. And I was like, no one needs to hear from me. But here they are listening to me right now. But I was always a connector all the way since I was a child. It was bred into me by being the entity made by a mom and a dad who were what you would call serial connectors, using the technology they had back then, the typewriter, the manual telephone, actually the manual typewriter and the rotary telephone. But every morning at the breakfast table, they would have the five local newspapers plus yesterday's or the day before's.
Wow.
Because it would come via the mail. And this was in upstate New York. And they would be clipping and cutting articles that made them think of friends, families, colleagues, and then go to their respective manual typewriters, type short little missives after clipping, and off into the mail. And I thought everybody's parents did this. In the late 80s, when I secured my first fax machine, although I don't think I ever figured out how to use it, all of a sudden I was like a kid in a candy store because I could do what they were doing, but simultaneously. And then the 90s brought email and the aughts brought social media. But I was always using these tools to bring people together. And in 2018, I started to realize that the company that I founded, 90% of our business was inbound. So what that made me realize is all those connections I built in my 20s, in my 30s, in a good part of my 40s, because I didn't found the company till I was 48. I realized that people need to understand that connections are really valuable, not networking, building meaningful connections.
Right.
So that finally put me over the, I thought, you know what? And I don't want to sound crass, but there's money to be made in a way if they're handled beautifully and carefully and nurtured like you'd nurture a garden.
And you develop a methodology, gather, ask, do?
Yes. Well, first and foremost, the underlying theme of the book is leading with how you can be helpful to others, no matter where you are in life, whether you're just finishing college or graduate school or not going to college or graduate school or approaching retirement. We always have ways to be supportive of others. And when you think of traditional networking, it's very much about what can you gain? What can you walk away with? How can people help you? So just think of that when I go through this methodology. So in the gather phase, you connect with the most important person in your life, and that is yourself. And you essentially do an audit of what your superpowers are and what your goals are, let's say, for the next 1 year, 3 year, 5 years. Then you think about who do you want to connect with or reconnect with that are going to help you meet those goals, but also ways you can be helpful to them. Lastly, in the gather phase, you think about the hermetically sealed bubble that so many of us live in, where we tend to connect and attract people who look like us, sound like us, the same age, race, and color, myself included. Then you move to the ask phase, and the ask phase is learning to ask the meaningful questions of others so that you can find out what their hopes and dreams are, rather than just thinking about what you're trying to gain. And if you listen carefully, which we are all woefully bad at, you can get to the do phase, which is where you become trustworthy, reliable, responsible, because you follow through. And when I say follow through, it doesn't have to be the next day or the next week, but over time, rinse and repeat. So that's the gather.
I like that.
Our show is called Doing Sustainability, but it's the doing that is the active most important thing here. So that connects with do.
And that's sort of a segue into how I originally had heard your name before. When I used to read every year, you know, what you think trends are going to be for that year in sustainability. So I followed that over the years and, you know, always found it very valuable. So I was reading, you know, your pretty much your take for 2024. And I really found it quite interesting, the six trends that you really felt and had other experts that you were asking and they were contributing to. And I just wondered about those. Are you still feeling that those are all going to be the same thing?
Yeah.
Prioritize collaboration over competition to reach shared goals. Access to comprehensive ESG data and rigorous reporting capabilities will be essential. Double down on commitments to move from fossil fuels to renewable energy and be prepared to shift corporate responsibility strategies quickly and in real time.
Well, these are the hopes, I can promise. I would say out of all of those, the one that I think needs to be bumped to the top is business understanding its role in protecting democracy. I certainly don't want to go down the political route, but we're not talking about a race between two equal individuals, right? I mean, you can think whatever you want of the current president, but he's steeped in democratic beliefs and what, you know, the Constitution stands for. And business has to understand that if we lose our democracy, business won't function in the way it's functioned for the last. And believe me, there's plenty of ways we can improve business. Don't get me wrong. But we are staring at an abyss that we won't even understand how to traverse. And if you look at autocracies, businesses are not independent. So out of all of those pointers for 2024, I would lift that to the top. If your audience has interest in learning how business can be a better stewards of protecting our democracy, I would recommend an organization called the Leadership Now Project, which was founded back in 2017. I think knowing, having kind of a crystal ball into the future that this was going to be important. But not to take away from the other issues, I do believe the S of ESG is becoming much more important, especially with Gen Z as they come into the workforce, because belonging, diversity, and inclusion are vitally important in addition to the reduction in greenhouse gases that businesses are contributing. You know, and Just Capital, a tremendous organization, every year surveys the American public to find out what they want from business, and treating employees well bubbles right to the top.
Yeah, Allison Taylor spoke about that.
I love Allison.
She's been a guest. She's going to be a guest again and talk about her book. But I just love her. She calls people out and they need to be. She has the chutzpah to do it.
And she was an advisor for a while to BSR, and BSR just launched a guide to social justice for companies. It's literally was launched this week. And I guess I should be transparent and say we launched it, my firm. But regardless, we didn't write the guide.
In a recent post of Axio, it held an important conversation on corporate reputation. And as a corporate brand agency and as a communicators ourselves, we all have something to do with that, right? And it says, PR isn't what it once was, and the profession should rebrand from public relations to protectors of reputation. Up to 25% of a company's market value is based on reputation, according to the World Economic Forum. The reality of the world that we're operating in is that everything has a reputational component. So tell us about how boards must have someone at the table who understands just how vitally important the organization's reputation is.
And communication.
They don't. I mean, I think the Axios was quite astute in stating that that is needed, because I think with the shrinking pool of journalists, that can decipher and potentially add rigor to stories that come out before reaching the consuming public. Anything and everything can get out the door. So it is in a company's best interest to have wise counsel internally, externally, to help them traverse, because I do think we're going to see more of this, unfortunately. And again, it matches the vitriol we're having in society, too. I mean, companies are made up of people. People have values. They bring them to the office. So you're going to need to be able to handle differing points of perspectives, but also realize that occasionally something that you don't want to get out the door is easily going to get out the door.
It's a different ball game.
I'm curious, when that happens with one of your clients, what's the game plan behind that?
We are an impact communications firm. So generally, the bigger corporations have their like Edelmans or Weber Shandwicks. So they're the ones that get called. We get called after the fact.
Yeah.
I am a big believer. And in the past, you have to have a plan ahead of time.
Crisis communication plan.
Yeah. But there are experts. And I don't want to like say we don't get involved, but we do try to stay in our swim lane because there are plenty of agencies that have been, this is what they've been doing the entire time. And God love them for it, because it's not the most satisfying work to work with people when they are going through horrible situations.
I find we have a few clients, but I mean, we have a history of over 40 years. And the ones that consistently communicate various things or to their internal audience, whether it be ethics and values or it be sustainability and what the company's doing and how it, you know, is going to impact their jobs and give you education for your own personal choices in your own life, those companies seem to weather the storm a little bit better than companies, as you say, who don't have a plan and they aren't making that effort.
Well, and being transparent, being upfront, not just when it's the good times, right? I mean, this is all part of that. But I do think keeping your employees abreast when you're making decisions so that they're not caught off guard. They may not agree with decisions, but they will feel a heck of a lot better if you included them in the beginning than learning after the fact. 100% agree with you.
We often say that when we're working with a client at first, we say we need people involved from the top, from the very beginning. They feel a buy-in to whatever goes on. But over our years of experience, we know that if we don't do that and things are going to progress all the way to the final comprehensive design presentation, it's the first time that leadership sees something, it's 9 out of 10 times a nightmare. Yeah. You got to have that buy-in.
You know this.
So changing the topic here, Susan, in your newsletter, you ask, is AI inclusive? And you talked about the adoption of generative AI is happening quickly. That's an understatement. Industries and sectors from advertising to transportation to politics are finding ways to incorporate this new technology into the foundation of the work. Tell us about what you are seeing, what your perspective is.
Well, I wish I could share a rosy picture, but what I have seen so far is it is still very much controlled by the traditional patriarchy of Silicon Valley, and nothing against white men, believe me. But when we look back at other cataclysmic technology developments, whether it's, you know, the internet or email or social media, you know, whatever you can say about that, electricity, all of these were founded by white men. And what we're seeing is the people controlling, the organizations controlling the output and development of AI is very much that way. So I'm a big believer in whatever we can do to shake that up so that this next generation of tech is filled with various thought leaders of all walks of life to make it representative. Now, whether that can happen, I don't know, but I do know people are getting very vocal about it becoming so. So we'll see. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, the AI will use whatever the input is into the system. So the bias of who's ever choosing what thoughts and experiences and knowledge that system's going to have, that's really the bottom line.
with my team, we talk about use ChatGPT, use these various tools so that you are providing input, like it gets smarter. So believe me, right. I am encouraging people to utilize these tools.
On the spot, just still taking it in and trying to figure it out. You know, there's always the good, the bad, and there seems to be a lot of ugly here. So,
you know, and just the fact that we're trying to and discuss and debate social media at this point, 25 years later, and looking at impacts of that on our society, on our children, on our democracy, it's scary because you want to say, you guys have got to do it now. Put limits on things.
Yeah, and carefully, of course.
Think it through. Let's not spend 25 years on this and be completely at the mercy of it.
Susan, we haven't talked about being an angel investor.
Yes.
And so what excites you about
it? Gives me a seat at the table. When I founded my company at 48, I still didn't know how to do an Excel spreadsheet.
Right.
And I never had this burning desire to be an entrepreneur. I'm an accidental entrepreneur. I founded the company with the goal of having a new job in 6 months. And that was 11 years ago, almost 11 years ago. And I always joke, I never would have named it McPherson Strategies if I thought it was going to be something. Because it, to me, I mean, I totally respect people who name companies after themselves. But to me, I would have come up with something more unique or descriptive of the work we do. And also, it's my ex-husband's name. And we divorced in 2003.
Oh, okay.
Good guy. But I would have come up with something maybe a little more creative. Anyway, I digress. But the angel investing was a way to learn more about how businesses were being operating. I fervently felt the issue. I mean, I've never taken funding. Consulting isn't as cash dependent as, say, development, programming, et cetera, product creation. But 2% of funding goes to women-led startups. Far below that goes to women of color-led startups. So I started to think, you know, it's one way I can make a difference. I'd always been philanthropic. So I look at this almost as an extension of my philanthropy. But I've learned a lot from it and learned an education that I wouldn't have been able to learn in any kind of school. So that is my experience.
I started the business, fell in love with a corporate annual report. And this was 40 years ago, Susan.
Wow.
And so we were designing corporate annual reports, and I hired a writer, and we were writing and designing corporate annual reports. And I worked with a lot of early stage companies. And I did, you know, they just paid us a fee for services. And, you know, I wish I would have invested in a Qualcomm back in that day.
Oh, yeah.
or one of Al Mann's companies that he turned and sold. So I was kind of interested in that angel investing and those opportunities. The one client that said, buy my stock, he went bankrupt within 18 months. So luckily I did it. So we're going to do this again in 5 years.
Oh, my goodness. I love that idea.
What's our topic going to be?
I don't know. This sounds crazy. My next company.
Because when you look back 5 years, so much has changed.
Yeah. Well, we had something called the pandemic when you look back. Well, I just hope what we talked about earlier in terms of the elections, we're not looking back at it. Because I think the three of us will not be in this country anymore. We'll be Zooming from another location on this planet. But that's a wonderful idea. And you have to both let me know how I can be supportive of you all. And if there's guests, potential guests, I can introduce you to. Because there's nothing I love more than connecting people.
Terrific. We're going to take you up on that.
And let me know if you come to the East Coast in New York.
Yes, I will. Thank you for your flexibility.
Thank you. Have a wonderful afternoon. Stay safe with the rains.
Yeah, nice to meet you.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. This is just a reminder to follow Doing Sustainability wherever you get your podcast. And please leave a rating and review if you like the show. It helps others discover us. And of course, we want more listeners.
If you want to learn more about our agency, Baker, and how we can help you build your corporate brand, align your culture, and evolve your ESG reporting, head to bakerbrand.com. See you in the next episode of Doing Sustainability, where we focus on practical and actionable approaches to sustainability to create long-term value.